Dr. Walt, I think you were about to explain you couldn't sell your shares if you wanted to. What did you mean by that?
Well, if you're a member of the board of directors or have or executive position or have any kind of inside information about a company that's publicly traded, you are precluded from selling shares except during certain periods, which are called open periods, when all the information that's known about the company is known to the public. With companies of this type, that's a rare occasion, because there's always information that's confidential, things that are happening, and if I were to go and sell any stock or buy stock, it would be considered insider information. So there are the Securities and Exchange Commission. I'm just a professor. I learned all this stuff after my technology was successfully invented by the company. You learn that you really don't have the opportunity. On paper, you could be worth a lot of money, but trying to get it is impossible.
Going back to the SAB meetings versus the board meetings, are the people on the scientific advisory board the same people that are on the board of directors?
The only overlap is myself.
And you also mentioned that it's hard to schedule things occasionally. Is it hard to schedule all of the people on the SAB meeting to come together for an SAB meeting?
It's almost impossible. These are very well-known scientists with extremely tight travel schedules, and just trying to get somebody at the company at the same time is something that you have to plan at least 6 months in advance.
That was my next question. How far in advance do you know if—
At least 6 months in advance, and even then, people may cancel.
Could you put up trial exhibit 116, please?
I'm sorry?
116.
Thank you.
We've heard about this January 2000 SAB meeting.
Uh-huh.
Let me show you trial exhibit 116. Does this look like the agenda that was given to you at the hotel the evening before?
I can't see it.
Could you look in the binders behind you there? The same trial exhibits are there. It's number 116.
Could somebody come and organize my office like this? This is great. Yes, this is the schedule.
I think Mr. Pantone asked you whether or not you would call Dr. Zarnik asking to revise that agenda. Do you have any recollection of that?
I recall his question. I don't recall the revision.
I think he also asked you about whether or not scientific problems or scientific challenges were an appropriate topic for an SAB meeting.
And I said yes.
Do you see that anywhere on the agenda?
No, I do not.
Would it have been appropriate for that general topic to be listed as an agenda item on an SAB meeting agenda?
Yes.
Do you have any knowledge that anyone prevented that from being placed on the agenda?
No. I would assume that if there were concerns about that, that it would have been brought to my attention.
Are scientific problems or scientific challenges, is that sort of an overarching goal of having a...
That's the primary purpose of having the meetings.
So would it be appropriate to have that as the single goal or the single item of an agenda?
That could be the agenda, but I would say that book, maybe something like that, should have appeared with details about what those problems were so the members of the scientific advisory board could have familiarized themselves with the specifics on the agenda.
And does this agenda appear to you to be something that would take 6 months to prepare if you have 6 months advance warning?
I think about 5 minutes.
Are you familiar with a relationship that Illumina has with a company called Applied Biosystems, or ABI?
Yes, I do.
Objection, Your Honor. Beyond the scope.
This is beyond the scope.
Well, let me ask you. Are you familiar with the concept of selecting codes as part of that ABI relationship?
Same objection.
Just to speed things up, do you want to reopen?
During your cross-examination and direct examination by Mr. Pantone, he asked you about the 768 decoding experiment?
Correct.
Do you know if that experiment was also a screening experiment to select codes for the ABI relationship?
I believe it was.
Can you explain to the jury what selecting codes means?
Yes, I think I did briefly already. What it means is, let's say we go through this example that I demonstrated before of having a million of those words, or even let's make it a little simpler. Let's say we have five-letter words, and I put all the letters of the alphabet, all 26 letters of the alphabet, and make every combination of those 26 letters. Some are words that mean something, and other ones are just gibberish. So, to make the same analogy, what you do is you make a large number. You make a population of those, and then you select only the words that actually have a meaning. So, in this particular example, for the decoding, the 768, what do you want to do? You want to start with a big number and then select that down to 768 really good codes that work.
And let's go back to Dr. Zarnik's goals with respect to oligobinary decoding. I think it's 227. Do you remember there were two sentences in the goal for oligobinary coding? The second one was to make and decode an array of all tenmers and verify identities of a representative subset of decoded tenmers.
That's correct.
Let's break that down. How would you make an array of all tenmers? How difficult would that be?
That would involve really doing just what I described before.
What would you physically do to take that pool of oligos that you made and make an array?
What you would do, you would make each one of those. Instead of in solution, you would make each one of those tenmers, 10-letter words, on a bead in the same process that was described by me earlier. So you would put all those on beads, and then you would have a million of them. All million of them in solution.
I think you said it would take a week or two to actually make that pool?
That's correct.
How long would it take you to put that on an array?
To put it on an array?
Physically.
To put some of them on the array, which is really what's being, it says a subset.
I think it says make and decode an array of all tenmers. So what would you do with that if you wanted to make an array of all tenmers?
You would put those onto multiple fibers, and so you would spread those out on multiple fibers, and depending on how many little wells and beads you had on each fiber, you could do the map and you'd have to spread them out. But that's a technology that the company has in place. So I would say, up to this point of making all those tenmers, putting them onto the array, all Dr. Zarnik would have had to do would be to go to the appropriate people, and they would have done that for him.
How long would that take?
And that would take probably 2 or 3 days more than the 1 or 2 weeks.
Then I think you were going on further in that sentence to decode an array of all tenmers and verify identities of a representative subset of decoded tenmers. What does that imply to you? I realize this is the first time you are actually reading this.
I'm very familiar with this because this particular project, this is his idea. This is Tony's idea. He came up with this.
Objection. Move to strike.
Dr. Walt, do you know who came up with this idea?
Dr. Zarnik came up with this idea during the early stages of the company. It was in a phone conversation. It was in the very early stages of the company. We knew that coding and decoding were going to be very critical at this stage to the path of the company. We did not know how we were going to do it. It was before there were any laboratories in the company, and every day or a couple of times a week, we would get on the phone. Dr. Zarnik called these telephone meetings, and we would have all afternoon brainstorming sessions to just invent new ideas about how to do this, how to do that. And Dr. Zarnik came up with this pretty interesting idea of binary decoding by using antibodies and other kinds of binding materials. That was in 1998. And in 2000, nobody had worked on this project, even though he was the chief scientific officer of the company. And this was incredible. It's mind-boggling that somebody who came up with an idea that was of scientific value to a company wouldn't even have some of his own staff members work on this particular project during his time as chief scientific officer. So this was actually an attempt, I assume, on Jay's part to put this technology back on the table and to have somebody who had come up with the idea, who one would think would be excited about working on that idea. This was an extremely fair thing, saying, hey, it's your idea, go make it work. And yet, step one wasn't even taken.
Dr. Walt, many of the people on our jury are not scientists. Everyone keeps saying feasibility, proof of concept. What do these phrases mean?
In any scientific endeavor, you do research. In any research project, you don't know if an experiment is going to work. If you did, it wouldn't be worth doing it. That's why it's called experimentation. And so, when you do a feasibility experiment, what you do is you design a relatively simple experiment to demonstrate will that experiment work in its simplest manifestation, meaning at the 30-day goal is 2 to the 4th. Is that the number? So 16. A very reasonable number to pick. If the 16 doesn't work, then you say, hey, we have a problem at 16. We can't go on. We can't go beyond that. If 16 works, then you can say 16 works. Now let's see if we can go to 256, 2 to the 8th, and you work at 2 to the 8th. And if that works, you say, great, now let's go to the 90-day goal of whatever that number is and see if that works. So these are not etched in stone. They're not fixed for somebody. It's an iterative process. You set some goals. You say, here's where I think I could be in a year, but it's all on paper. This is the kind of standard thing that anybody that's doing science would do. Say, where did we think we could be in a year? It's not saying this is where we're going to be. It's just saying, here's a reasonable place that we think we can be, and here are some milestones we need to achieve along the way, 30, 60, 90 days.
I think you said you are familiar with the notion of setting goals for your students. Is that correct?
Yes.
Does it make sense to arrange them with these time frames in kind of a cumulative fashion? You build on prior experience?
Objection, Your Honor. Relevance.
Sustained.
Dr. Walt, what would happen if you never even achieved the 30-day goals, composed project plan and budget? What would you do if that wasn't achieved? Could you progress any further?
Objection. Lack of foundation.
Sustained.
Dr. Walt, are you familiar with where the O-Nose technology came from?
Yes, I am.
Where did it come from?
Came from my laboratory.
Who is in charge of the O-Nose project at Illumina?
Who was in charge?
Yes. From the inception of the company, when it was formed, which group at Illumina was responsible for pursuing it?
The chemistry group.
Who headed the chemistry group?
Tony Czarnik.
I think you also mentioned that you are familiar with the evolution of decoding experiment for Illumina. For the 768 decoding experiment, do you know whether or not Illumina was able to successfully decode any of the bead types for that experiment?
Yes, they were.
Do you recall how many?
I don't recall. It was usually, something like 1 out of 4 would work. So I would think that out of 4,000 that were tested, the expectation was that 1,000... get 500 to 1,000, something like that.
For the 768 experiments, would you agree that the number 768 referred to the number of bead types that were used in that experiment?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
I think you said 4,000. I'm wondering, where did you get the number 4,000?
768, at least in the way in the context it's been used, is the number of good codes that were selected from the overall pool.
Okay. Then I think you may be referring to a different experiment than we've been referring to. I think the record is going to be a little confused on that point. If the 768 decoding experiment was an experiment that was conducted that started from a pool of available 768 bead types...
Yeah. Then the numbers would end up being about trying to select about 200 of those, cull that down to about 200 good codes.
So your expectation would be if you started with 768 sequences, you would not expect to be able to decode all 768 of those sequences.
If you started from a random pool of 768, that's correct. I would not expect to be able to decode every one.
Let me just confer a moment, Your Honor. I think we're done. Thank you, Your Honor.
Any recross?
Very briefly, Your Honor.
Okay.